brought to you by Burr and Foreman, broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia. It's time for Results Matter Radio, where we bring you pertinent business information and offer real-life solutions to help drive desired results for you, whatever your business may be. Now, here are your hosts, Elizabeth Gordon and Lee Cantor.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Elizabeth Gordon. Welcome to the Results Matter radio show. It is March 5th, 2013, and today we are talking about the Atlanta Women's Foundation. Two lovely guests here in the studio with me to tell us all about the Atlanta Women's Foundation. Danita Knight is here. Danita is a public relations and fundraising consultant and the chair of the board of directors for the Atlanta Women's Foundation. Danita, welcome.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
And Deborah Ryan is also with us. Deborah is the interim director with the Atlanta Women's Foundation and vice president of development and communications. Deborah, happy to have you here as well.
Thank you. Good morning.
So, ladies, let's start by giving people some background about what Atlanta Women's Foundation does. They have such a great impact on the community, and I want to make sure we cover a lot of background before we dive a little deeper.
The Atlanta Women's Foundation is the only foundation in the state of Georgia focused on the needs of women and girls. We're a public foundation, and that means that we raise dollars from the community and then grant it back out to organizations that are serving women and girls. Our mission is to be a catalyst for change in the lives of women and girls, and our vision is to work to eliminate generational poverty for women and girls.
So the whole philosophy here is that lasting change can only really be created by empowering women and girls in society. Let's talk about what generational poverty is and how that differs from, say, chronic poverty.
Chronic poverty is a situation where an incident can occur that throws your family into a tailspin, and all of a sudden you've moved from a place where you have things to a place where you're in an emergency situation because you no longer have those things. Generational poverty is basically a way of life which, although none of us probably can understand it, involves sometimes even grandmothers being in poverty. Then they translate what they know to their child, and so a mother of another child that is in poverty, and that's what the third generation may see and therefore emulate because that's all they've seen.
So it just becomes a cycle. Now, Danita, I know you just gave a talk around this, and Atlanta is such a prosperous community. There's so much wealth and money and business prosperity here, and I think sometimes people feel removed from what actually happens in terms of at a poverty level. Let's give some numbers to make this real.
And these are coming as a result of a research report that we just completed as a foundation. But the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services defines poverty for a family of four as $23,050. That's
wow.
It. And then statewide, 43% of female-headed households lived in poverty in 2011.
That's unbelievable.
The other one involves just pregnancy. And one in five babies born in 2009 in Metro Atlanta was born to a mom still in high school or without a diploma. One in five of those moms has a second baby typically before age 20. And then in terms of graduation rates, it obviously tie into that as one of the causes as well. Those vary in the five-county area that we focus on, but none of those are good. In each of the counties, at least one in five don't graduate, and the numbers range as low as 52% in Atlanta Public Schools and Clayton County.
My goodness. So, Deborah, what does that translate to in terms of the ripple effect that statistics like that have on the overall community that we live in?
It weakens our community, and we believe at the Women's Foundation, if you invest in women and girls, and especially focusing on the prevention and education at the early side, you can lift someone. It's easier to keep someone from going into poverty as opposed to just lifting someone out. So if we can encourage girls to finish high school, if we can mentor them to think about a career path as opposed to just having a job, we can keep them from having that child until they're older, they have a stable living situation and a partner, so that way it won't continue the cycle that they have grown up in. So that's where the Women's Foundation comes. And overall, it just strengthens the overall community.
Excellent. Now, this program, Women on Board, is a program specifically designed to help women develop the skills for serving on a nonprofit board. Why is this initiative so important as another element of the work of Atlanta Women's Foundation?
Well, we are all about supporting our grantee partners, and those are the nonprofits that we have selected over the years, and we believe those individuals do the best job of meeting the needs of women and girls who are dealing with this generational poverty issue. So this brings a couple of key groups together, those grantee partners and individuals who are probably typically from the corporate community, women, who have an interest in more direct involvement, i.e. working with a nonprofit and serving on that board.
Okay.
Elizabeth, can I jump in?
Please, Dana. I love it when you jump in.
All right. Because I'm the producer. I don't think I got introduced yet. So I'm Dana. But, whenever these topics come up, we can all, sort of give statistics and smile and speak nicely about wouldn't it be nice if we could prevent, girls from getting pregnant in high school and whatever. But then you have all these laws or discussions of laws or statute or all these, I don't even want to get into the politics of it, but that we shouldn't teach our kids about birth control and we shouldn't teach them about and that abstinence is the way and all this crazy stuff that seems to just be, short-circuiting what you guys are trying to do. Because you're right about education, certainly, and availability of, let's say, birth control. You're not going to stop kids from having sex, let's face it. I mean, I hate to say that. I have a 20-year-old daughter and, knock on wood, she'll get through college without, she got through high school without getting pregnant and hopefully she'll get through college the same way. But you can't stop. They have hormones raging and that's what we're meant to do as human beings. So I guess my point is, how do you or how much time even do you guys have to spend sort of invested in fighting back, if you will, to make sure that you can educate girls? Because there's so much push from certainly, religious right, I guess, to not talk about it.
Well, fortunately, as the Women's Foundation, we don't have that task, but our grantee partners mm-hmm. absolutely have that job ahead of them. I'll give you one example that I referenced when we were talking about our research report yesterday. We mentioned a young woman whose name is Shanae, and Shanae is the first in her family to go to college, to succeed, to graduate from college, to own her own home, which she has done all on her own, to have her own car, which she's done all on her own. She had the support of her mother, who was not exposed to the same kind of opportunities that she was exposed to. But what we have found is the program that embraced her, which is called Create Your Dreams, one of our grantee partners, completely embraced her. So there was this whole wraparound model that they used for her and that they use for all of the young men and women who are part of that program, where they give them everything, every tool that they need, including, I'm sure, discussions about how to protect your body, what's appropriate, how to respect your body. And what they're finding is that kind of exposure and that kind of information and telling the truth in that way has made all the difference with the young men and women who are part of that program.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's so critical that, I'm not suggesting that we advocate kids having sex by any stretch of the imagination, but I think having all those tools in your toolkit is the only way you're going to succeed. And the other thing I just wanted to jump in on, then I'll just let you have the floor back, Elizabeth, but is, you talk about prevention versus lifting someone out of poverty once it's happened. Is it sort of a poverty sentence if you have a baby in high school? I mean, or is there a way to lift yourself out?
There are, and there are wonderful organizations that can bring supports, the wraparound services. One of the things is that's a real indicator for poverty is if you have that second baby before you finish school or when you're under 20. And that's one of the rates that's most disturbing in the state of Georgia. You've probably seen the headlines of the good work that GCAP, Georgia Campaign Against Adolescent or Georgia Campaign for Adolescent Pregnancy Prevention. They've been doing wonderful work fighting against a lot of the issues you brought up earlier, helping teens, both boys and girls, avoid risky behavior that might lead them into situations. But the real indicator for poverty is when that girl is in a situation and she has that second baby.
Yeah. I think it's really a lot of times for girls. I mean, I have a girl and she, listening to she grew up pretty good in terms of her self-esteem and all of that stuff. But I know with a lot of her girlfriends, I think the reason they run to jump in bed with a boy oftentimes is because they are trying to build up their self-esteem. They want that approval from the boy. So if we can even get there earlier to these girls and teach them how to, say, this is not right for me. I'm not doing this because of peer pressure or because I want you to like me or any of those reasons that I'm going to have sex when I'm good and ready, not for any other reason. I think that would be half the battle.
Build self-esteem through other things, like taking on leadership positions, getting more educated.
Right. And exposure is the great equalizer here. You know, when your world is basically a small square, either that could be family, geography, whatever that might be, you do what you know. But when you are exposed to other things, you realize that there's a bigger world out there. And in terms of this concept of generational poverty, even though your grandmother or mother may not have been exposed to that world, you now are. So you can't help but benefit your entire family unit by gathering more information and taking that back to your family and exposing that to people who may be older than you even.
And one thing that we saw in our research, we actually did focus groups with women living in poverty, because it's one thing for us to sit back and say, these are the issues that we feel like are facing women and girls. But to have a conversation and say, you know, what's your day-to-day life like? Every single one of them aspired for something better for their children, whether it be finishing school, going to college. There was, across the board, not a single one of them wanted their child to stay in that situation. So that shows that there's that aspirational, and they want to find the supports, and that they want something better for their children.
I have a quote in that regard from our research report, and it says, "My daughter, even though she's only in second grade, I keep on her about her work and how important school is, and so she's been on the honor roll. They are skipping her a grade. I just want her to finish school because I didn't."
That's excellent. Now, you mentioned the grant, how you work with your grantee partners. Can you explain a little bit more about that process and how the decisions get made about which projects do get funding?
Absolutely. The money that we raise, we push back into the community to organizations that have programs and are centered around serving women and girls. Each year, we have one large grant cycle. We have smaller grant cycles throughout the year that may focus on senior women or an organization doing particular work with one individual. But the major grant cycle is open to every organization to apply. We take those proposals, and because it's not the Women's Foundation's money, we recruit volunteers to come in and help us with those grant-making decisions. So they read the proposals, they go out on site visits, they learn about the work that these nonprofits are doing in the community, and then they come back and make decisions on how we fund. The great part about it is the Women's Foundation is kind of the good housekeeping seal. So they've been vetted. You know, we have a special financial review group of volunteers who are professionals in the field who review the finances. So by the time it gets to our volunteers who are making those decisions, we know that these are the best organizations doing the work. And so then at that point, it just becomes about, gosh, we wish we had a lot more money.
Absolutely.
Because everybody's doing good work. And the greatest thing that we can do is hopefully introduce people to some of these smaller organizations that are really on the front line doing this hard work, and help bring more awareness to them as well.
Excellent. Actually, and let's go ahead and give the website address if people want to check that out, because
absolutely,
I know we're talking about a lot of interesting stuff. So atlantawomen.org
absolutely,
is where you can go to find out more information.
And to donate, by
and
the way.
And to donate. Women on Board. So getting back to this program in particular, now, what impact does having women on boards of nonprofits have? Why is it important to have more women, in leadership roles on the boards of nonprofit organizations in the city?
Well, I think we understand each other. There are just some fundamental things that we all have in common as women, whether we are very wealthy women or women who are struggling to make it from day to day. So the beauty of that program is that it's the concept of women helping other women. And then that concept leads to women becoming more aware, particularly the people who are serving on the boards, and then they can go out and tell those stories specifically about what's going on the various boards that they serve on.
Excellent. Well, and I know I've read lots of research in terms of women, having women on the board of for-profit organizations, and how, you know, that makes profits go up. So obviously organizational effectiveness also improves the more women you get there in the boardroom too.
Absolutely. Just let us run it. We'll take it and make it happen.
Well, and we also see it as capacity building for our nonprofits and our grantee partners. If we can send well-trained, really ready-to-go board members to them, that's only going to make their organization stronger, so then they are able to fulfill their mission.
So the program started in 2000, and since the inception has trained over 1,700 women in board governance and leadership skills. So if people don't understand what's board governance, I mean, that's probably why some people avoid going into these positions. They don't have all the knowledge and the skills. Let's talk about what kind of leadership skills are necessary and what one needs to know about from a board governance standpoint.
We talk about this very thing all the time as it relates to even our own board of directors, but first of all, you have to have a passion, I believe, for the board that you serve on.
Right.
So most of the folks who are involved with Women on Board are totally focused on women being successful and girls being successful, and to some extent families as well. But you have to have a passion about what it is you're doing. You have to be willing to, as I call it, get dirty. And that means raise funds, sometimes volunteer, be an ambassador for that organization, learn that story of that organization so that you can go out there and tell it. But ultimately, a good board member is someone who can help raise funds for that organization so things can get done.
Right. Absolutely. And what's the program like when someone enrolls? What could you expect from going through the program?
It's a great. It's a program that starts in the morning, finished by 3 o'clock. You have lunch. Terry Tyson is the facilitator, and Terry's been doing it. She helped develop the curriculum, and so she's a longtime friend and worker for the Women's Foundation, but she deserves much credit for the content, and she just has an incredible nonprofit background, both on the volunteer side, serving on organizations like United Way's board and Children's Healthcare, as well as she was the president of the MS Society National. So she has it. She has the perspective as a staff and as a volunteer. But during the day, it's sliced up into everything you're going to need to know, whether it's what to expect in the number of board meetings. What's your real financial commitment? What does it mean to have fiduciary responsibility? Because, you know, if that nonprofit, something happens, it's the board that's responsible for that. I think one of the more powerful things is a volunteer for the Women's Foundation decided to go through the Women on Board program. And at the end of the day, she was like, you know, I'm not ready to be on a board. I'm not ready to take that on. And so she learned that she needed to develop some more skills before she went out to pursue a nonprofit to be a part of. And to me, that's really valuable. It's also, we have level 2 and level 3. So for level 2, a lot of times we'll have current sitting board members. And so they can ask questions. It also creates a cohort of women that you're like, oh, you're on that board. Well, I'm on this and we're facing that. And so it creates that network. And then finally, we introduce, and we did at the food bank in February, we bring our grantee partners who are looking for board members together with the women who have gone through Women on Board. We called it speed dating so that they could kind of meet some folks that might meet the needs they're looking for. It helps the women who are looking for board placements to find things they might be interested in. So those are some of the aspects you can expect out of the Women on Board program. We also have a portal that once you've gone through Women on Board, you can go to, and we post nonprofits that are looking for board members. And so that once you've done that, you can go back forever and check that.
As a graduate of the program to continue. Mm-hmm.
And it's only $150.
Oh, man.
Wow.
So you've also conducted a lot of research around these issues. I mean, that's why you're able to make such an important commitment and impact on the community, because you have the knowledge. So what are some of the things that have come out of the research and decisions that have been made based on research findings about the continued work of the foundation?
There's a lot. Basically, there are several what we're calling overarching community approaches that are the result of this research. Helping to set women and girls on a new path, for example, is one of those. And the concept of wraparound services, which Deborah and I talked about a little bit earlier, where you have a holistic approach to embracing someone who's in a crisis like this, and you give them all the tools they need to be successful. And then also the concept of, you mentioned it earlier, community mentors and coaches and role models. That's a huge piece that we know we need to do more of. And then the program specifically underneath those areas would be life skills, for example, planning, financial literacy, job readiness, career planning, physical health and wellness, something as simple as nutrition and exercise, which is coming up a lot these days on a national level, and teen pregnancy prevention, emotional health and wellness, stress management, if you're a parent, how to parent effectively, self-esteem, which we talked about earlier, and just how to have a healthy relationship. And then the concept, obviously, of education, which relates to some of the statistics we mentioned earlier, to help girls stay in school. If you don't stay in school, to still help you survive and thrive via GED, via some kind of vocational training, anything like that that can get you on your feet so you can move forward in spite of any obstacles that you're facing.
Nice. That is very holistic. You're right. And you're also involved with several affinity groups. Mm-hmm. There's a very active women in business, women, you know, that relate to other women community here in Atlanta. And you're tied into many of these top women affinity organizations as well. Has that helped to strengthen the organization and the impact?
Absolutely. Not only does it create a space for women in the same industry to come together and meet each other and potentially work together, it also raises funds for the Women's Foundation. So this is a group of women who may be in finance, or a group of women lawyers who have that opportunity to network and meet others. But the payoff in the end is that they're raising dollars for the Women's Foundation.
So we're at the point in the program where it's time to talk results here on the Results Matter Radio. We like to tie all of our impacts back to results, and we've mentioned a lot, but let's drill them home here now, ladies. What are the results that matter to Atlanta Women's Foundation? Danita, let's start with you.
Well, we always want to be able to raise money to push it back out to those organizations we believe are doing the best job of serving the needs of women and girls in crisis in this community. But as it relates to the research, I'll share a few things. It really forced us to look at ourselves more internally as a foundation. Although we believe we're doing a good job, you can always do better. So some of the things as a result of the research that I mentioned will result in change for us. For example, we're going to focus on early intervention programs that support girls who are ages 18 and under in terms of some of the foundational issues that I mentioned earlier. We want to help girls have a chance by keeping them in school. Our grant-making committees, which Deborah mentioned, are reviewing their research and their activities to make sure we are focusing, again, on the organizations doing the best job of focusing on emerging issues as well as issues that relate to women. And then also we're working with community partners to leverage some of our research and our resources and our learnings. So you will see a lot more collaborative activity from the Atlanta Women's Foundation in the future, because we know we can't make a difference alone. We also are going to continue this year to communicate the findings of our research to a number of different groups, from Rotary Clubs to Kiwanis to churches to politicians, to any number of individuals that need to know this information about what's going on in the 5-county area for women and girls.
Nice. Excellent. They're so strategic, Dana, here. I love this. Like, that's a very organized and strategic approach for approaching what are really big issues. Yeah. And require this holistic and multi-pronged approach.
I'm glad someone's out there doing it, Elizabeth.
And the number's too big to ignore, I should mention. This is a fundraising luncheon that's been going on for several years, and that's had a big impact as well.
Deborah's favorite event.
It's my favorite event. And Danita and I worked together. She was the chair for many years. But in 2011, when Danita chaired, we raised over $1 million at that single luncheon. We had a surprise gift from the Coca-Cola company. Our speaker was the CEO of Coca-Cola, and he made a $500,000 gift on the stage. So it was a really powerful endorsement by one of Atlanta's leading companies, mm-hmm. and their CEO to say, we believe in the work of the Women's Foundation, and we're going to put our dollars behind it.
Wow.
And Danita did the ugly cry on the
stage. I would have done that too.
Utar can't console me.
That is awesome. So, Deborah, on your end, since you've been involved in the organization for so long, what are some of the impacts and results that you've seen, and what do you think matters most?
It's really about the personal stories, those individual women. Shanae was our Sue Wieland Award winner in 2012, and she was just an amazing young woman who had that personal drive and ambition and had access to a wonderful partner through Create Your Dreams, one of our grantee partners. But the story goes a little deeper, because the way that we were able to give that award is because Sue Wieland, a true leader and founding mother of the Women's Foundation, made a $1 million gift. So it's about the women we serve through the organizations we make grants to, but it's also about the women that we bring together. And I'm going to take a moment to brag on Danita. She is a volunteer, and we're in a transition now. We're in a search for a CEO, but she probably works 80 hours a week on the Women's Foundation. So it takes a village to get things done. And the Women's Foundation has a small staff, so we really rely on our volunteers. But our true result and impact is that we're being good stewards of the dollars that donors generously give, and that we're making a difference by investing in the highest impact organizations.
So once again, if you would also like to make a difference by contributing to Atlanta Women Foundation and help with this effort, atlantawomen.org is the website where you can go to find out more information. There are a lot of great events, ways to get involved, and absolutely opportunities to give money to the foundation. Ladies, it's been a real pleasure having you on. We've been
talking with
Danita Knight and Deborah Ryan, Atlanta Women's Foundation. Find out more at atlantawomen.org. I'm Elizabeth Gordon. You've been listening to Burr and Foreman's Results Matter Radio here on Business Radio X, and we will talk to you next week.
This has been a joint production of Burr and Foreman and Business Radio X. Burr and Foreman is a full-service law firm with offices across the Southeast. If results matter to you and you want them to matter to your law firm, please give Burr and Foreman a call at 404-685-4337. For more information and to find the right attorney for you, visit burr.com. That's B-U-R-R.com.